So a few days ago, I sent a text to several people, and I said, in three sentences or less, what does home mean to you? Now, my first observation was it's very difficult for some to keep it within three sentences. So that was challenging. I get that. I want to share some of what folks said. Zeb Schoen said, home is a place that my kids can grow up. My home is freedom. Kathy Summers, home is my mom. A sense of security, knowing that you are living with people who are on the same page as you. Richard Binskin, home is the family's rallying point. And Courtney Kirk, home is where family is. Today is our homecoming, and we are family. We're family through God. God is our Father, and we are brothers and sisters. We've been brought together through the blood of Christ. So there's this group of people in the first century that came to be a part of this family. They found a new home. They became citizens of heaven. And what they found in this new faith that they had in Jesus Christ is that on the one hand, it brought incredible hope and joy, peace, and life that is true life. So you got that on the one hand. But on the other hand, it brought all kinds of challenges and struggles. What they found is that folks were hostile toward them because of their allegiance to this king named Jesus Christ. So somebody, we're not exactly sure who it was, wrote to these folks. And we find what they wrote in the book of Hebrews. Now, I'd like to read Hebrews chapter 12, 1 through 3. We could get that on the screen. Therefore, since we are surrounded by such a great cloud of witnesses, let us throw off everything that hinders and the sin that so easily entangles. And let us run with perseverance the race marked out for us, fixing our eyes on Jesus, the pioneer and perfecter of faith. For the joy set before him, he endured the cross, scorning its shame, and sat down at the right hand of the throne of God. Consider him who endured such opposition from sinners, so that you will not grow weary and lose hearts. This is the message to these Christians who were new to the faith. He says, fix your eyes on Jesus. In verse 1, he says, run with perseverance the race marked out for us. So there's some really special times of the year, right? We've got Christmas and birthdays. We really look forward to those. Church homecomings, perhaps. But we have to say, the Olympics. I mean, it starts on Friday, right? Are we excited about the Olympics at all? Anybody excited about the Olympics? Okay. I wouldn't consider myself like the most patriotic person. I mean, I love the United States and consider it a great blessing and privilege to live in this country. But during the time of the Olympics, I mean, it is USA, right? I'm pumped about the Olympics. I mean, it's a thrill of competition. It's the sportsmanship that you see. It is the national pride. And names like Usain Bolt, Michael Johnson, Michael Phelps, Jackie Joyner Kersee, right? These become household names to us because of what they were able to do on that huge stage. And we know that the way that they approached their events was with an incredible amount of grit and determination. Don't you, when you watch these athletes, you look at it and you say, how are they able to accomplish what they're able to do? I can't hardly swim across a pool like one time, let alone 30 times, and at the rate, the speed that a guy like Michael Phelps can do it. And so you're just in awe of their ability. It's incredible what they can do. These Christians, the Hebrews writer says, run the race with perseverance. The race that's marked out with you. Run it with grit and determination. I think what happens so often is when we think about life, when we think about the Christian life, we think about it in terms of like a sprint. But we know that life of faith is more like a marathon. I don't even like to drive 26 miles, let alone run even 0.6 miles. I love the bumper sticker that says 0.0. That's so clever. So think about running, whatever distance it is, 26 miles or 1 mile. That takes perseverance. It takes patience. It takes grit, determination. The writer says, as you live this life of faith, do so with perseverance, with grit, determination. He also says, we're not running around alone. Can we get a couple screens down, please? We're going to have these highlighted, these certain sections. There we go. Excellent. Perfect. Thank you. So we're to run this race, and we're to do so not alone, the Hebrews writer says, but you recognize that you are surrounded by a great cloud of witnesses. And we know who he's referring to, right? Hebrews chapter 11, Faith's Hall of Fame. All of these people who lived faithfully for God, many times defying the odds as they lived into his promises. He says, you're surrounded by these folks. Imagine that. Think of that. Abraham, Isaac, Jacob, David, Moses, others are cheering us on. They're watching us as we are living out this life of faith, running this race. They have shown what it looks like to be faithful. They've also shown, I think most importantly, they've shown what it looks like to submit to God's will and purposes, allowing God to work in powerful ways in their life. And now, these Christians that the Hebrews writer is addressing, and even us today, we have been privileged to carry on the work, to continue running the race that so many faithful people did before us. Times like homecoming, they remind us that we stand on the shoulders of so many others. And those folks, they're cheering us on. They're witnessing us. They're watching us. Several times I went to the Oklahoma City Marathon, never even thought about running it, but I went to cheer folks on. It was so cool to see streets just lined with folks cheering on those that are running a ridiculous distance. You've got this, right? People are cheering at the top of their lungs. You've got this. You can do it. Keep it up. That's what the cloud of witnesses is doing for us. You've got this. You can do it. Trust God. Trust his promises. Allow him to work in you and through you. And so, the writer says, let us throw off everything that hinders and the sin that so easily entangles. We think through a couple questions. This section of scripture right here, it causes us to reflect on our own lives, or it ought to cause us to reflect on our own lives. Is there something that is holding us back? Is there a sin that's entangling us? And if so, what are you going to do about it? Thinking about it in a personal, individual basis. Is there something that's hindering you in running the race? Perhaps the writer was talking about loose clothing or actual training weights. But the idea is clear. We're to run free. And think about it collectively too, right? We need to think about this as a community of faith. Is there something that's holding us back as a group, as a people? What is it? We need to be clear about that. We need to talk about that and address that. And then he says, fix your eyes on Jesus, the pioneer or the author of the faith, the protector or the perfecter of the faith. Jesus is the pioneer. He's the trailblazer of the faith. He marked out the trail, and we follow in his footsteps, fixing our eyes on him. He's the perfecter, too. Any opportunity or any chance of us becoming clean, of our righteousness, of our completion or perfection, all of it is going to come through Jesus Christ. None of us can do that on our own, right? Our purity, our holiness, our righteousness, it comes through Jesus Christ, through Him alone. And He set out a way, and so we reflect on Him. We think about how He lived, how He treated people, the way that He ran the race, so to speak. And we follow Him. We fix our eyes on Him. And He says more about Jesus. He says, "For the joy set before Him, He endured the cross, scorning its shame, and sat down at the right hand of the throne of God." So this is like one of those super perplexing passages. I mean, it's clear, but it's also kind of perplexing. "For the joy set before Him, He endured the cross." Joy, crucifixion. How do those go together? Right? Jesus was confident of His mission. Jesus was confident of His identity. He knew who He was. He knew where He had come from. And He knew where He was going. The writer says that He's going to sit at the right hand of the Father. And so, even in the face of death, Jesus could approach it with joy because He understood what was in store. He understood the end. He scorned its shame. It was supposed to be the cross, the place of humiliation, of mockery. And Jesus scorned its shame, making a symbol of death actually a symbol of victory and of life. And He's sitting at the right hand of the throne of God. So the Hebrews writer says, consider Him. And that word consider is to reflect, to think deeply on Him. Consider Him who endured such opposition from sinners. Jesus faced opposition. So this is really important as well. Jesus faced opposition. We will face opposition as well. We shouldn't be surprised by that. Remember, we are following in the footsteps of Jesus. If He faced opposition, we will likely face opposition as well. It says, consider Him who endured such opposition from sinners so that you will not grow weary and lose heart. For that original group, you'd have to imagine that they were perhaps on the brink of losing heart, of growing weary, if they were facing persecution or the threat of persecution or mockery or opposition. You have to imagine perhaps some of them may be new to the faith saying, nope, it's not worth it. It's not worth it for this. Life is so much easier without Jesus, perhaps they were thinking. The writer says, consider Jesus. Fix your eyes on Jesus so that you will not grow weary and lose heart. I would imagine with a group this size, there are some here who are on the verge of growing weary and losing heart. Maybe you are weary. Maybe you have lost heart. The writer says, fix your eyes on Jesus. He's the pioneer. He's the protector or the perfecter of the faith. You face family pressure and you even think, you don't know, yeah, we're facing family pressure or illness or even thinking about the political climate of this day, you know, we want to talk about that. Struggles with the flesh. Fix your eyes on Jesus. That's what the writer says. Thinking about fixing our eyes on Jesus. We have lots of different decisions to make every day. We're making decisions. On Saturday, I was at HEB picking up toilet paper. 45 different kinds. The cereal aisle, I mean, decision after decision. But let's be serious. We have decisions about who we're going to marry, where we're going to go to school, what we're going to do for a living, where we're going to live, how we're going to parent, how we're going to be a spouse. May all those decisions fall under the umbrella of first making the decision that we are going to fix our eyes on Jesus and Him alone. We live in a shiny world. There's shiny stuff all over. And our eyes just love to wander, don't they? Oh man, that. Oh man, that. That looks nice. These things are vying for our attention, for our focus, for our heart. Fix our eyes on Jesus. And so this is homecoming, right? And this is cool. A lot of people have been praying about this. A lot of hard work is going into this. I want to especially notice Clarence Owens and Debbie Pinnick and Cindy Zimmerman, Mary McClena. There are so many others. And whenever you start mentioning names, you're going to leave somebody off. I realize that. So I'm sorry. The Lord knows of your hard work. So God knows what's better than that. So so many people have worked so hard for this day. And as I was reflecting on what to say on a special day like this, I thought, what better thing to say than fix your eyes on Jesus? And earlier in Hebrews, the writer said this. This is 10, 24, and 25. And let us consider how we may spur one another on toward love and good deeds, not giving up meeting together as some are in the habit of doing, but encouraging one another, and all the more as you see the day approaching. Spur one another on toward love and good deeds. And so in this Christian race that we're running, hopefully with perseverance, let's remember that we're not running alone. So Debbie Pinnick said about home, home is where you find total acceptance and can let your guard down. Jim Nick said, home is a place of safety, love, refuge, comfort, and happiness. Haley Hudson, home is where I feel safe and comfortable to come as I am. And then Connie Wheeler, home is where unconditional love flows, a place to learn without judgment, a place where I'm fully known. Welcome home. Home is where Jesus is. And going home, it often reminds us of what's most important in life. So back in June, we went up to Ohio. I went home. And I was reminded that the Buckeyes are still the best. I was reminded that 80 degrees in the summer does happen in some parts of the, and not just at 2 a.m., some parts of the country. But I was also reminded, seriously, I was reminded of family, the importance of family, like so many mentioned when they were asked what home meant for them. Welcome home. And may I remind us that there's another home, another homecoming on the horizon. That's what the writer says in chapter 10. He says, encourage one another. Spur one another on as you see the day approaching. It's coming. And as we look forward to it, we support and we encourage one another. No one's running alone. Sometimes we have to pick each other up. Sometimes we have to tug others along. Sometimes we have to yell with Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob, you've got this. You can do it. Keep fighting. Keep pushing. Use grit and determination. But if you don't get anything else from what I'm saying today, get this and allow this group to be a witness to this truth, that you are not running alone. If there's anybody here today that is ready to give your life over to Jesus in baptism, we would love to witness you do that today. Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob would love to witness you do that today. If there's anybody here today that needs the prayers of the family, we'd be glad to pray with you or for you. So whatever need that you have, you can come forward now as we stand and continue to worship our God.